The Citizen's Guide to the Supernormal.
Was thinking of actually breaking into a Yankee Candle and smelling all the candles, like the weird ones you don't want to smell while people are in the store.
Like the avocado one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or the one that smells like cut grass for some reason.
Yeah, no, I don't. Why do you just mow your fucking lawn?
Right. I don't know. I don't get that.
I mean, I'll smell them if there's people in the store. I don't.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't smell them if there were people in the store.
Well, you seem like a sniffer, you know?
Well, I mean, they're good candles.
I feel like, I'm thinking about maybe like putting on some ASMR.
Yes.
Maybe somebody like opening up a roll of duct tape. Somebody whispering, you know, talking real low. And then, if the mood strikes, I'm going to take a glass rod and shove it into my urethra and hit it with a hammer so I can feel something other than sadness, you know?
Is this because you've been married for so long?
A little, yeah.
I wouldn't recommend that, actually.
No?
It sounds painful.
Yeah.
Okay. Fuck it. No, let's go to Yankee Candle, then.
I'm good with that.
No, okay,
it's
cool.
It'll smell better, too.
We ready to start?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Have we... we've been recording.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole time.
Obviously.
Oh, all right. Well, welcome back to Citizen's Guide to the Supernormal. This is a podcast dedicated to the weird, unexplained, and all things sticky, stupid, and uncomfortable. Like being a janitor on a bukkake set.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
My name's Jordan.
So much pine salt.
And I'm going to kick it over to Sarge, you know?
Gross.
Murphy's oil soap.
Blah.
All right. My name is Sarge. With me, as always, is Maynard. And joining us again tonight, you've already heard from our dedicated producer, Jordan. We're on Twitter, so follow us. God damn it. I'm at Bastard Prophet. Maynard is at Maynard Rules, and Jordan is at CG Super Jordan. You can follow the show at CG Super Normal. And if you'd like to contact the show, which I guess now it would kind of make sense if you got some complaints or something, you can hit us up at citizensguidepodcast@gmail.com. We're hosted by Branded Sports at www.thebrandedsports.com. Incidentally, you can also follow Branded Sports on Twitter because they're fucking awesome. They're at branded_sports. Finally, we have an announcement. We set up a Patreon. So, Patreon, the idea behind Patreon is so that we can make money to put back into our show. So what you want to do is go to patreon.com/Sarge the Destroyer. And we've got a number of tiers where you can donate money and make us basically dance for you like monkeys. And if you incidentally donate $14,099, you can have Jordan's job, and we will fire him.
I'm not getting paid currently, so.
Perfect.
You know.
I want to give a shout-out to the patrons who've already donated. I'm only going to use your first name, so don't panic. Allison jumped out at $10. Kimberly gave us $25, so we're going to read a story to you. Michael Wrights hooked us up. I imagine his last name isn't Wrights, so I said that one. I think that's just his screen name.
What if his last name is Wrights?
Well, Michael's going to be very disappointed that I just doxed him on the internet. And then, of course, we have Shannon. Shannon gave us $50. She is our best friend. We love her. Holy cow, we wrote it as a joke, to be honest with you. So now Maynard and I have to write her a song.
I'm excited, personally.
I'm very ready. Excited. We're going to sing the shit out of this song. I just wasn't expecting to have to actually perform.
Maynard listens to a lot of The Cure, so...
Well, we want to get Shannon's musical influences so we can kind of, you know, give her money's worth.
Exactly. So I want to thank you, obviously, for giving us money. We really appreciate it. We're actually going to take the money that you guys have donated and roll it directly into us buying some new recording equipment so that we're not... doesn't sound like we're recording in my basement, even though we are. And so, one last bit of housekeeping, and then I promise we'll get out of this nightmare. If you like the episode, please review us on iTunes. give us a 5-star review. Give us a review, like actually write it down and say things about us because it makes us feel better. And also it gives us direction to head in for the next couple of episodes. So without further ado, I've given you a lot of bullshit to think about. Let's actually get in. Buckle up, gang. Saj has a story. On our previous episode, in 1959, 9 hikers died on a mountain pass in Siberia. What killed them is evident. Why they died is as mysterious and unclear as what the fuck is going on with Sarah Huckabee Sanders' weird fucking eyes. Some of them were found partially nude. Others were found wearing clothing of their dead comrades. Some victims had staggeringly catastrophic injuries, while others appeared to die in the least sexy case of exposure ever. What followed was an investigation so ham-fisted they might as well have been staffed entirely by Porky Pig's BDSM club. The notorious secrecy of the Soviet government provided few answers. In mountains of wild speculation proposed by all manner of tinfoil hat-wearing dipshits. Tonight, we will cover some of these theories. And now I'm going to hand the show over to Jordan. Let's make it happen.
If I could, so I just imagine that Porky Pig's BDSM club. if you were like the safe word was bananas, you'd be bananas.
And I came. Anybody get a towel?
Or you'd have a black eye and a concussion.
Oh man. Oh boy. All right. Also, last episode we discovered new sexual terms like geologist hammer.
Geologist hammer and splitting a tangerine.
And don't forget the half-buried flashlight.
Half-buried flashlight's another one of my favorites.
So,
have you guys added that to Urban Dictionary yet?
Somebody has to do it. We got to get somebody else.
I'm not nearly creative.
Somebody out there in the fan world, please add it to Urban Dictionary and then at the show, at one of us, so we can just take a look at it on Twitter. And then we'll blast you out and we'll give you a shout out.
Isn't a geologist hammer what that guy in Shawshank dug out of the prison with?
It was.
Yeah.
All right. Carving rocks.
So maybe whatever it is, it also involves a fucking poster of Raquel Welch.
I'm okay with that.
Okay. Oh, wow. So maybe you're just fucking a hole in a poster. Is it that sad? That's sad.
That is kind of sad.
Don't do that.
All right.
Maybe, you know what it is? It's the glass rod up the urethra.
That sounds. I don't know how to make that connection. No, that's.
I was just trying to make it a thing.
You know what?
Right?
You're not bananas. Anyway, all right. So we're not sure why these guys died.
Hold on, Jordan. Jesus fucking Christ! Use a coaster. They're right there on the goddamn table. We're not fucking animals.
This table's not even that nice.
Just use the fucking coaster. I don't have to clean it up. The table's going to get all fucking sticky. They're right there.
Oh, my God.
Bruins fan art. I bought the fucking thing just for you. For when you come over and record, I bought you a special coaster because I love you. And fine, he's going to use the Boston Garden one instead.
Clang.
I have a second drink, fuckface. Jesus Christ.
Oh, he has two drinks. Excuse me. Jesus Christ. Fucking prima donnas.
All right.
He doesn't mix his whiskey water. He
now
just
we're
drinks
ready.
Whiskey and water.
Yeah. Right. Fair enough. All right. So we're not sure why these people died. We know how they died. Gruesomely.
I covered that briefly, yeah.
Right. Gruesomely.
Gruesome deaths. Horrible fucking deaths.
With weird injuries, like the force of a car wreck.
Yep.
With no outside wounds and shit. So, UFOs.
What?
That's
insane.
Not how I feel about this at all.
You might as well just say fucking chemtrails.
So there's a photo that was found on one of the dead guy's cameras. And I can't remember which dead guy, but one of them. There was five, six,
we'll post
seven.
It on the Twitter when we drop the episode so you guys can take a look at it.
Referred to as frame number 33. It's probably nothing. There's a little octagon in the middle, and then it looks like there's like a falling flame out of the sky. If you're to believe...
Or maybe
UFOs.
Just a poorly exposed photograph.
It really could have been. It could have been anything. In the way to discredit this photo, some of these people say that in order to stop where the camera was, they snap off a picture of nothing. And this could have been taken in the morgue. It could have been taken by accident. Nobody knows. But frame number 33 could also be a UFO. And a little bit about the UFO is that there are these flashes of light and whatnot streaking across the sky horizontally in some cases. Floating there, and it was well reported that that happened not only on the 1st and 2nd of February 1959, but throughout parts of March. And Lev Ivanov, the man who was in charge of the Dyatlov investigation, in the 90s was speaking to a local journalist who happened to mention that he had requested documents from the KGB that had UFO information in it. Now, so,
and I'm sure they just handed them like right over to him.
Right. Well,
before we go too far into the theory, I think one of the main things that we need to cover is that there's a lot of misconceptions about what the term UFO means. So UFO is an acronym. It means unexplained flying object. So I think it's important because I don't know. I guess I would say since the 50s, it's been more of a euphemism for an alien spacecraft. And I think it's important that we make the distinction that UFO is just that. It's an unexplained flying object. We don't know what it is. So we're when we say UFO, we're saying that it could be aliens, it could be...
I'm not saying it was aliens, but we don't know if it was aliens.
It's aliens. We're saying that it could be, you know, maybe just a, you know, glow-in-the-dark Frisbee. Those existed.
Did they?
At some point, yeah.
Back then,
They used to use radium on watch faces so it would glow in the dark. So it's possible. Anyway, the reason I bring it up is just because I think a lot of people immediately assume that UFO means spacecraft, and that's not always the case. A UFO could be ball lightning. It could be a strange bird you've never seen before. Could be cosmonauts hurtling to the Earth
birds, because
the Soviet Union was terrible at launching astronauts into space.
There's a lot of foreshadowing in what he just said. So,
Let's continue.
Lev did this whole thing, and he claims that A.P. Krylenko, who's a member of the Soviet Congress, and his advisor A.F. Ashtokin, forced Ivanov to take out any reference to unknown flying objects or strange phenomena. That happened in, he admitted to this in the 1990s. And it included the pictures of the spheres drawn by the Mansi hunters and other testimony of the Mansi people. The Mansi, as you recall...
Attract bears.
No, that's... The Mansi, as you recall, are the Russian aborigines.
The Inuit people, yeah.
Right, yeah. The indigenous people.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I used the wrong word. My mistake.
So it's worth noting that A.P. Krylenko and A.F. Yeshtokin...
Do these people just have acronyms for first names, too? Like, they're so thorough, everything's an acronym?
I'm going to go with Andrew Paul Krushenko.
Okay. Andre?
Krylenko.
Andre.
Krylenko.
It doesn't matter. Let's go on.
All right, so...
long show. We got to get through it.
Right. So they were they withdrew various materials from this to completely take any question about the UFOs out. One of the things that caught Lev Ivanov off guard was that when they were doing their investigation, he said, when EP, again, EP, what is it with the fucking names in the... When EP Melissa...
Let's just give him a name. We'll say Edward Philip.
Okay, when Eddie P. Meslenikov and I examined the scene in May, we found that some young pine trees at the edge of the forest had burn marks. But those marks did not have concentric form or some other pattern. There was no epicenter. This was once again confirmed that heated beams of a strong but completely unknown, at least to us, energy, were directing their firepower towards specific objects, in this case people acting selectively.
Can you think of a... some kind of natural phenomenon that might cause that?
I can.
Okay.
Are you ready for the second theory?
Yes, let's do it.
In a completely different theory, I give you ball lightning.
Ball lightning, here we go. That old chestnut.
A ball of lightning.
A ball of lightning.
Yeah. So this actually has some of the most meat to it as far as an actual theory that may have caused these people to run out of their tent into their death. So here we go. Presented by Nigel Evans. They believe there was a hot spot near the tent where ball lightning. Now, ball lightning, for those who don't know, is an unexplained atmospheric electrical phenomenon, right?
Yeah.
It refers to reports of luminous spherical objects in varying diameters from pea-sized to several meters, usually associated with thunderstorms. But they last considerably longer than the lightning that we are used to. They actually stay in one specific area and will burn.
What are the characteristics of it? Like, does it... does it float? What does it do?
So ball lightning, we can post a picture of what ball lightning does, right? But it actually strikes the ground, but has an epicenter. So looks like a floating light in the sky, which again, reported by the Menti, reported by several hikers in the area throughout February and March, floating orbs of pulsating light.
So what's interesting about the ball lightning theory is that ball lightning has actually been recorded numerous times throughout history. One notable time was in the, it was 1700s, colonial America. Some ball lightning was said to have traveled down the chimney in someone's house and actually kind of went into the chimney, rolled through, and came into the house.
So you would say that it went down the chimney without consent?
Let's not Kavanaugh this.
I was just thinking like Santa Claus.
Don't trump up the charges here, okay?
All right. Well, you know, shit.
Santa Claus always has my consent. That's why I leave him fucking cookies.
Oh, I thought you left him cookies so I didn't touch the booze.
No, I leave him some booze too. So most people leave Santa Claus milk, but I say fuck that. Santa Claus is cold. I'm going to leave him a glass of nice scotch. And hope that he forgets all the urethra playing I've been doing.
So they believe there was a hot spot near the tent and that the camera, frame number 33, actually caught ball lightning striking. Right? So,
That's kind of interesting.
So I don't know if you've ever tried to take a picture with a camera in the middle of the night, but you're not going to get much. So the reason the picture would be so blurry is because...
There's why Maynard does all of his fetish shoots during dusk. Best lighting.
That is the best time.
Right?
The golden hour.
Good showers.
Call it. Yeah.
Perfect. Golden hour for golden showers. All right.
Yeah,
so.
You've done it then. You know.
Yeah. Right. So.
didn't even have to bring it up. He knew.
Given that the local Menzies. Excuse me. Given that the local Mansi people blamed golden orbs for the tragedy. And repeated sights of lights from reliable witnesses in the same period together. They thought that what happened was this hot spot actually started to burn hotter and closer to the tent. And instead of trying to rush out and get out the door, they cut themselves out because it would be quicker.
Do you think that the ball lightning might have landed right at the door? Is that what you're saying?
No. Because they were so high up in the mountain. The ball lightning might have been striking closer to them, and where it was above them at a certain height, it may have started to exude some heat. It probably scared the shit out of them. I know if there was like a ball of lightning over my head, I'd probably not be comfortable.
I gotta be honest, though. I still feel like I've been camping a number of times. I don't ever feel like I would be the kind of person who's like, well, gonna cut myself out of the tent now, as opposed to using the fucking pre-made door.
Well, when you consider that they knew where the tree line was, this is the whole part of this, right?
So, yeah.
They knew what the tree line was. They figured they'd be safer in the tree line than
right. But still,
in
like,
a tent made of
you have a door.
Metal and canvas.
Okay.
So they cut themselves out of the tent to
but
escape.
But that's why I'm thinking the ball lightning might have been real close to the front door.
Yeah, and
was it knocking on the door?
I just posted
knocking at the door. Paul McCartney, that motherfucker. All right, continue. Sorry.
All right, so they hurried to the tree line. And while they were waiting there, because they had rushed out of the tent, they tried to light the fire, which is where it explains the fire at the base of the cedar to keep warm because the ball lightning was still pretty
bad. The ball lightning scared them. But so just going back real quickly, the door. The tents. Were all the tents cut open?
There was only one tent.
I thought there was two.
No, the tent was like
The tent slept 9 fucking people?
It's like 3 or 4 meters long. That's like 12 to 16 feet.
That's...
Remember, they stitched it together. That, oh,
that
you
tent
were...
got awfully sexy, awfully quick.
They slept side by side by side by side by side. Side by 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 side.
No, I got it. I knew what you were saying.
Right.
I smell what you're stepping in.
Okay. So, while they waited for the object to disappear, the 2 deaths at the cedar tree were due to a single electrical event causing burnt hair, bleeding head orifices.
Orifices. Orify? Is it orify?
It says orifices here.
All right, fair enough.
Large burns, burnt clothing, pulmonary edema, and tree damage. The subsequent 4 deaths in the ravine were due to an explosion near the den. This is where you'll remember... This is where you'll remember that the people who ended up in the ravine were on the fir branches.
Yeah.
They had the most severe injuries.
Mm. Okay.
The force of that lightning strike may have been the same force like a car wreck. Breaking all the ribs and shit.
So this is a second lightning strike?
Yeah. Other lightning strikes happened throughout the area. There was multiple orbs in the sky. So there was the
lightning.
Lightning doesn't necessarily
happen on its own.
It doesn't happen by itself. There's not one ball of lightning. There's balls throughout the sky.
Huh. That's
so
pretty interesting.
I didn't think
about that.
I thought
ball lightning was one of those things that only happened. You only got one ball.
No, I mean...
You got the Hitler lightning. It was just one testicle.
I literally just found a video on YouTube
of ball lightning going across
a field in Siberia.
Really?
Yeah, I posted it in our chat. We can post it on their website, but it's exactly as you're describing, just moving
slowly.
Yeah,
we'll post that on Twitter, too. We got a lot of shit to post on Twitter. Maybe we should start keeping notes. Yeah.
So the theory suggests that the people in the den were hit. They were thrown, causing the damage. Apparently, ball lightning can produce up to 30,000 amps. And temperatures several times hotter than the surface of the sun. I've not tested that theory.
I mean, with that heat, though, that would definitely explain them, slicing open the tent to get away as opposed to going out the
door. It's possible that these guys, these 4 that were dead in the ravine, were thrown 6 to 10 meters. With the blunt force trauma similar to car accident, what they refer to as barotrauma.
Well, the other thing to think about, too, is that they're on a mountain pass, which means that, you know, being thrown 6 to 10 meters in that area, you're going downhill, too. So you're not just being thrown 6 to 10 meters on flat ground. You're being thrown 6 to 10 meters and down at the same time.
Right. And so they also say that, you know, Dyatlov and Ludmila and Zolotarov, Sasha, right?
That's Sasha. Yeah, I think so.
They stayed alive for quite some time. But maybe this is why all of them had that tanned hue to them when they were found.
I mean, maybe, but that could also be sun damage because, when you go skiing, you know, you get a ski tan.
Yeah. So
could be anything.
Anyway. So, that's the ball lightning theory.
Okay.
In a nutshell.
All right. We're going to let that marinate. We're going to go to, a quick commercial break. But before you actually go to commercial break, one of the things I want to bring up too is, please buy one of our t-shirts since this commercial is going to be for Branded Sports. Please go to Branded Sports and buy a Citizen's Guide to the Supernormal t-shirt. The money goes partially to us to support the show and partially to the good people at Branded Sports to keep that website running as well. So please make sure that you pick up one of our t-shirts. It would make us super fucking happy. And then send us a picture on Twitter or on Instagram. On Instagram, I'm at Sarge the Destroyer. And send us a pic of the t-shirt. We'll be super happy and we'll call you out in the show.
I'm going to create a new Instagram called Sarge's Privates.
Yeah, please do.
That's going to be...
That's
and
one of the
just
tiers
be, it'll be
Sarge's Privates.
Me and Maynard will just be Sarge's Privates.
Okay. Done. And then, you know, send an email to the show and let us know t-shirt ideas. Give us a couple ideas. We got a couple of good ones we're coming up with, but if you've got
all
other
right,
ones...
They're waiting for a commercial.
Fine, fuck it. You know what? Screw you guys. I'm going to go smash my dick. This episode has been brought to you by www.thebrandedsports.com. Go to brandedsports.com. Check out all the stuff they got. They're a pretty fucking awesome website because they're sponsoring this fucking podcast. I apologize for all the swears, but if you're from New England, you'll understand. Thank you, and have a wonderful fucking evening. All right. All right. So, here we are. We're back. Jordan, hit us up with theory number two.
Great. So we talked about Sarge's privates.
We talked about the t-shirts. Get a fucking t-shirt, you sons of bitches.
All right. We talked about UFOs.
UFOs.
It's never UFOs.
It's never UFOs.
It was UFOs.
It was UFOs all the time.
And we've now ASMR. Talked about we've talked about ball lightning.
Ball lightning.
This isn't one of those.
Sorry, you said ESMR, and I just flipped the switch.
Fine, I'll get the roll of duct tape.
If I said EDM, would you start coming in with like a fun? There we are. All right. So, this whole segment's gonna be dedicated to one theory. And then we're going to throw a little surprise in there. But there's a theory.
I've done that before. They don't always appreciate it.
Yikes. So I would not. I mean, that's uncomfortable for me to even talk about right now. I was just
talking about a thumb in the butt. What are you talking about?
The thumb in the butt. I'm not interested in the thumb in the butt. I'm just.
That's
because
you
there.
Just don't know how to potty. You don't go to the second knuckle. It's just like the first one. A little bit of pressure.
All right. So the best theory comes from Moses Axelrod.
Who has the best name?
So I don't know if his name is really Moses, but...
His name is Biblical and a flower. I'm very happy for him.
I would have much rather his name been Carr Ramrod.
I feel like if his name was Moses Axelrod, though, like he should be a badass blues musician.
I don't know if it's actually Moses Axelrod. I think like Moses might be like a nickname, and then Axelrod's his real last name. Regardless.
You just blew my mind. All right, continue.
Right, so
moving on.
The best theory comes from Moses here, also referred to as Axelrod in the interview. He was a friend and fellow student and mountaineer of Igor Dotlov. The two traveled together in the past, and he was invited on the trip but couldn't attend due to a previous commitment.
He was potting the Red Sea at the time.
So the reason Axelrod Help postulates...
Jewish people find their house.
He also wrote a bunch of words onto some tablets made of stone.
They were very heavy.
You carry two of them? What are you doing?
It's good that there was only 10 commandments.
Right.
Imagine if it was like 25 commandments. You would need a backpack.
Well, they're probably...
You need a baby Bjorn?
Yeah. With his air Jesuses.
Some Jesus Tevas.
So, I mean... Oh. Thanks for that.
Pouring too loudly for the show.
So,
indeed.
There were probably 25 commandments. Maybe he dropped a tablet or two on the way back.
He's like, you know what? Fuck this. No one cares about abortion.
If you are born before a certain age and you hear the word tablet, we're not referring to iPads.
That's true.
We're referring to blocks of stone that the Flintstones used to write and do their homework on.
That all of our laws came from.
Yeah.
Written by people who didn't know where the sun went at night.
All right. So he postulates that... The group fell victim to an avalanche. Based on his travels with Dyatlov, his knowledge of the planning of the trip, and his experience as part of the search party, Axelrod assisted with the planning of the trip, by the way. Nothing suggests that the trip would have gone off without a hitch. Axelrod stated that Dyatlov was a professional, almost. And it was clear that something went wrong.
What was his first clue, the fact that no one came back from it?
When it was clear that something went wrong and Dyatlov 9 didn't come back, UPI initiated the first search, not the Russian government. He said the institute organized the search and under the general guidance of the famous Sverdlovsk mountaineer Evgeny Polokopov.
Kazintai.
Masnikov.
Oh.
Right? Oh, maybe this is EP, guys.
Oh, there it is.
All right. So EP.
No wonder it's called EP.
EP Maslenikov.
Ripes.
Maslenikov. I don't know. Fuck that shit. I must say, the searches were built tactically flawlessly, he said. Four search groups crossed the intended route of the Dyatlov group in various places, which made it possible to determine how far the tourists, these are what mountaineers are called in Russian, is tourists, how far the tourists went. The fifth group followed their route exactly. And then he says, skipping ahead, it was that party, the fifth party, that found the Dyatlov group storage, the Labas, because you'll hear me say that again, and the tent. Axelrod's group, his search party, was dropped off on Ortorten. He walked several kilometers and found nothing. And there was a plane that circled overhead that dropped a canister with a note that said, Found empty tent and skis on side of mountain 1079. Axelrod's party went to that site and immediately knew that the nine had died. Axelrod immediately knew that this tent was theirs because in 1956 he helped stitch the tent together. He said nothing seemed out of place. The tent was laid down carefully on top of skis. And in the corner of the tent was a diary. The last date of entry was February 2nd, 1959. The base camp had been set, and the hikers had ascended the mountain with a light amount of gear and storage because they had intended to return to the base camp within 2 days. Okay, right? So we've all heard this story before.
Yeah. So I guess this is maybe where I thought the second tent came into play. They had set up a second tent down...
There was a second storage, okay. But yeah, it was a storage tent, though.
It wasn't a real tent.
Yeah,
yeah.
No. Okay. So on the first day of the search, 1 kilometer down the slope, the base of a mighty cedar... what he refers to it was the stiff course.
Another sex act, just so we're clear.
The mighty cedar.
We've got five from this story now. I'm going to give her the mighty cedar later on.
At the base of the mighty cedar were the stiff corpses of Krivoshenko and Doroshenko.
The stiff corpse. Man, we're really nailing them tonight.
Really? You're nailing stiff corpses, huh?
They don't move around much.
The search was concentrated on the slope between the tent and the cedar along the forest border. Using long probes, they found the bodies of Igor Dyatlov, Zina Komlagrova, and Rustam Slobodin. So those are five bodies.
First five bodies. Say that five times fast.
There were no signs of violence on the bodies, he says, but the cause of death was hypothermia. On the feet were only wool socks, which immediately rose aversion to them having lost control of themselves, which is sometimes also called the infrasound theory, which was disproven because humans can't detect infrasound, and they only like 9% of them feel it.
And it could also be paradoxical undressing, which is the more reasonable theory there. Because when hypothermia happens, you start shivering and you're uncontrollably cold, and then sometimes for some people it progresses to the point where you actually feel extremely warm, and you take all your clothes off. Which is why when you find modern day. When you hear about a lot of young people who, like, I don't know, went to a party and then went out to the woods to walk home, they're often found nude.
That and meth's a hell of a drug. So,
well, it really depends on where they're found nude, I guess. If you're in Missouri, it's probably meth.
Having lost control of themselves, they would have cut the tent up and run out. Axelrod specifically states here, and this is his words, what caused this? Most often it was associated with a bright, close flash, accompanied by the roar of an explosion. But they did not speak out loud about it then, and in general, this was confirmed by indirect data. So again, talks about the possibility that there was a phenomenon, maybe ball lightning, that caused them to run out of the tent. He talks about how the Mensi people and many of the tourists in the area, the mountaineers, had observed the unnatural glow of celestial objects in the Urals in early 1959. The other four were found in the spring when the thaw began. The bodies of the tourists were discovered on fir wood in a deep ravine. So fir wood had been laid down and the bodies had been placed there.
Fir wood is also a 1970s boner.
This is true. It's true. It is.
They had different injuries that were completely inexplicable and didn't fit the hypotheses put forward. Koloya Thibaut Brignol, the French guy, had a dent 7 to 9 centimeters at the base of his skull. Lubia had symmetrical fractures of 5 to 6 ribs. Zolotarov had rib fractures, but on the contrary, everything was on one side of the body. And next to the wounded fir branches was Kolevatov's frozen body. After the findings in May, the investigation actually seemed to have reached a dead end, giving rise to rumors of the involvement of military in this tragedy.
So when you say involvement of military, I mean, are we gonna get deeper into that?
I was going to, but I liked the ball lightning theory so much that I decided that I was going to run with that for the rest of this episode. But there claims to be some people who think that the KGB or the Russian military were launching off either rockets or parachute mines in the area of the Urals that time of the year. They claim that there were no launches between February 1st and February 3rd, which is a real randomly specific time frame to not have launches if you're launching.
We were celebrating Groundhog Day. There was no launches those days.
Lots of groundhogs. We were eating groundhog after because we ran out of potatoes.
So there
hold
was...
on, though. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry to keep cutting you off, but I guess what I'm trying to say is I think all too often we look at situations like these where these really strange, unexplainable occurrences happen, and we just want to throw one theory at it and say, okay, this is fucking explained by one thing only. I think it's more complex than that. I think this is multiple things. I think it's paradoxical undressing. I think it's possibly an avalanche, possibly ball lightning, possibly a Soviet launch that they're trying to cover up. But I don't think it's like that one thing like, okay, well, you know, this was just ball lightning and that's what happened.
Well, that's where this segment right here that we're doing is going.
Okay.
We're going to combine a couple of things together and we're going to rule out paradoxical undressing. I will tell you that right now.
How can you rule that out? It's like a pot of hypothermia.
Because we're going to rule it out, and I'll tell you why in a minute.
Okay. I'm intrigued. Let's go.
All right.
Yeah, let's do it.
So, Axelrod states in his own words, I have my own theory. Dyatlov organized a storage in the valley. He was intending to return back after a small circle. Having carefully put things that were unnecessary in the cache, the guys unhurriedly began to make a track up the east ridge. In the late afternoon, the weather began to deteriorate. It drizzled and snowed. This was confirmed by weather data.
So it was close to and above freezing at some point.
At some point, yes.
Okay.
The group stayed, strayed to the left and lost orientation. Everyone was convinced of this because anybody can get lost in a blizzard. Instead of pushing on, they quite correctly decided to lay down for the night. They quietly processed part of the slope. Rammed the site.
God, I love this fucking story.
Laid the skis down with anchorages and set up the tent.
I feel like you should read that part again with some Barry White in the background. Rammed the slope. Laid the skis down.
The dire inches of the evening were completely calm and contained neither drama nor anything expecting of one. It is not late. The guys leisurely dine. Remember past travel and someone already plans for the future and they go to bed. The strongest, most experienced, Dyatlov and Zolotaryov, lie, as always, at the sides in the coldest and most uncomfortable places. I think next to Zolotaryov lay Luba, then Koyla, Thibo, Rustic Slobodin, and I don't know who was in the center and beyond, but the four guys at the entrance lay that way, I think, and everyone fell asleep. The positioning of them is important because the four at the front of the tent are the four that were found in the ravine. In the den, as they called it. Deep in the night...
Positioning is always really important when playing a game of Ookie Cookie as well, so remember that, guys.
Deep in the night, when only the hushed blizzard slightly shook the skates of the tent, something happened. The roar, noise, sudden blow of an avalanche on part of the tent. The part of the tent adjacent to the entrance. The other part of the tent, which was under the large cover of a snow ledge, did not suffer. A snow ledge is actually a natural form... basically mini mountain of snow.
When the wind blows it to a certain peak. Yeah, okay.
Where it had drizzled, it probably had hardened the snow at that point, but it also, you know, when snow gets wet with rain and whatnot, being from New England.
Yeah, it gets crunchy. So you have like a crunchy layer on the top. It's like a hard candy shell, you know, and then you step in and there's
he states
snow
that the avalanche actually pushed over the tent because of the snow ledge, forming basically acted like a ramp. And then it sped down. The four lateral tourists, again, mountaineers, take the blow. The head of the ascetic Thibaut Brignol is pressed into the lens of the camera, which in the absence of the best, Koyla often puts under his head. I'm not quite sure what that even means. It's, again, translated from Russian, so it's really difficult to understand some of this stuff. Differences in rib fractures between Dibyanya and Zolotaryov are explained by their different positioning during sleep, one on the back and the other on the side. And the exit through the entrance was impossible due to the avalanche, so they snatched a knife, cut the tent, and helped everyone get out. Igor decides to return to the base camp, where there's first aid, warm clothes, and shelter, and down they went. again lost in the snowstorm. They made it to the forest where there was no storage, but under the spreading cedar, they realized they did not go where they intended.
So when we had first started this segment 100 years ago, we had talked about the fact that they were blown off course.
Correct.
So it stands to reason when they tried to go back the way they came, they obviously lost their
again,
markers.
They were in a blizzard,
yeah,
leaving the tent kind of in a rush to seek shelter. And
so it's almost as if like nature was saying, this whole fucking choice is a bad idea.
Right. I mean, the mountain's called Dead Mountain, right? So, yeah. You know, maybe let's just...
I think it's
just
important for
dead,
you know? To refresh people's memory who heard last episode, you know, 2 weeks ago.
Right.
To say, hey, you know, they were blown off course. It was already a bad idea to do this trek.
I don't know if this was said in the last episode, but we've talked about there was a fire started at the base of the cedar, and there were also branches cut from the cedar.
I don't think we covered that. No, so, I think we just went through the timeline like kind of point by point briefly.
So in the investigation, they made a special note to say that there were branches cut from the cedar. Because it's kind of important for this. So they ended up in the forest, and at the base of the cedar, they broke firwood to lay their wounded friends down in the ravine. Then they sheltered them from the wind and gave them all their warm clothes.
So for those of you who aren't familiar with wilderness survival techniques, one of the things that they teach you, one of the first things they teach you when you're stuck in a situation out in the snow is to lay down evergreen trees, cut branches off of evergreen trees, because it will help insulate you and keep you warm in those situations. So that's why they did it. It wasn't just like, you know, to make a soft bed. The evergreen trees actually help insulate on top of the snow, because snow, if you build a snow shelter, you could build an entire shelter out of snow to keep yourself warm, and it can actually raise the temperature inside to about 50 degrees as long as you pack the snow correctly. So between packing the snow correctly and laying down the evergreen trees, you can actually have a fairly comfortable night's sleep in a snow shelter.
So they laid the fir wood down and laid their friends down on it in the ravine to keep them sheltered from the wind. They gave them all the warm clothes and then tried to make the fire. This is Brignol dies. Datlov, Komlagrov, and Rustic Slobodin went to go to return to the tent and see if they could get some more clothes or maybe try and reach the shelter. It's not known what happened between then and there, but the three of them died leaving the cedar, heading back towards the tent. So this leaves a couple questions. Why wasn't the tent swept away in the avalanche? When they found the tent, it was very, very weakly stretched, and having taken the blow remained in place. Only part of the tent actually took the blow of the avalanche, the part where four people had slept. Why did they leave barefoot? So this is very important. He says, I can explain. Down there is a steep slope, which is crazy to descend in total darkness in slippery ski boots. Ski boots had no traction. And after all, they thought they were going back to their base camp to be able to resupply and get fresh, warm clothes that were there.
Okay. That's actually, it kind of solves a lot of the problems. So it's, you know, as you were saying, not paradoxical undressing. But at the same time, I mean, when you think about it, though, the worst clothes for the situation are still better than no clothes for the situation.
Correct.
So to me, it seems a little strange that they would leave in wool socks to go walk around in fucking snow. And what was it, 30 below at this point?
If you're carrying four bodies, you want traction. And
but that's
so,
the other thing I don't understand.
And they all have wool socks on. I mean,
why would you bother carrying four people you know to be dead?
Well, they didn't know they were dead. They don't think they died until they were, you know, dead in the ravine.
I know, but they're not cavemen. I mean, they understand. At
they
this
were
point
injured.
In the 50s,
I mean,
the knowledge,
injured.
General knowledge existed that somebody, if they died, they don't breathe anymore. You can at least test that.
Well, I mean, broken ribs aren't going to be a dead body. You're not, just because you broke six ribs on either side of your body, you're not going
to. But I guess that's what I'm trying to figure out is did they know they were dead?
Probably not. And if they did know they were dead, wouldn't you want to, you know, make sure you had your friends come out with you?
Yeah, after I survived.
Well, I mean,
after I got warm clothes and boots on my feet so I don't also die of hypothermia.
These are some of the same people that one was shot in, like in the leg by a rifle, and then the other one was fucking bit by a viper. And
well, there's something to be said for being Billy Badass, but there's also something to be said for being a fucking smart person.
Right.
You know, had they not carried these dead bodies, they probably very well could have survived. Some of them, at least.
I mean, they very carefully laid them on Furwood. This is very well...
But still, what I'm trying to say is, in an emergency situation, these people are not helpable. Well, they can't fix them.
And do they know that back then? You also can't see shit because it's a blizzard. So, you know.
Okay.
You can't assess injuries in darkness.
Well, I mean, kudos to the half-buried flashlight for not helping anyone.
No shit. All right. So, this is kind of tragic, but... he says, you know what shocked me most about this story was when Kravchenko's mother asked, tell me, did Yuri die as a man? And he said, they died with dignity. The only thing that we don't know is what caused the avalanche in the first place. And Axelrod says, I can't say what caused the avalanche, be it Mystic Forces, military testing, or something else. I think this is where we're going to use this ball lightning theory. The ball lightning probably struck off some of this avalanche, caused them to flee the tent.
So what makes you think it was ball lightning that caused an avalanche?
Well, because it's very well known that there was this phenomenon, the moving orbs across the sky, the way that people talk about how the orbs moved horizontally across the sky makes it seem to me like ball lightning acts the same way. It's very possible they actually decided to run for the tree line instead of the storage facility.
But I guess what I'm confused about is how does a ball of lightning, which probably can't be very heavy, affect an avalanche?
Wouldn't it melt? Wouldn't it melt the snow?
It would melt the snow in some senses.
If it strikes and it's got the force to throw four or five people like they talked about in the previous theory.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, so you make a good point. I guess that's what I was trying to figure out is what was it? What triggered the avalanche? Because it wasn't the ball itself. It would, you know, if
right,
it struck.
No, but,
okay. Because it would hit some moisture. There would also be some steam, of course.
It a branch of a tree that fell and...
But the other thing is, wouldn't there be some kind of point of impact that would be visible?
Not 12 days after the incident when they found them.
Okay.
When you consider they didn't find them for 10 or 11 days, it was a blizzard when they left the tent. I mean, you know, and then they talk about how the tree line had these weird burns on it.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
So...
I completely forgot that part because that was
You figure, you know, that 10 days is a lot of time. And
no, that's good.
The other bodies 4 months later, whatever May.
I think we would be remiss not to discuss the parachute mine thing really quickly.
So parachute mine theory was something that I read quickly. It's not a very popular theory, but it is there. The Russians at the time were testing parachute mines. As you can imagine, was during the Cold War. Parachute mines actually explode with a concussive force at a certain rate above the ground, sending the concussive force down. So it's very possible that a plane flying over had dropped these parachute mines. It's very possible the wind had taken them off their course because they're fucking parachutes, and brought them over towards the Dyatlov 9.
Okay.
It's very possible that the concussive force of a parachute mine could have set off an avalanche. And so theoretically, parachute mines could have caused the avalanche, but they explode and send down. They don't explode and stay exploding across the sky in a horizontal fashion, which was what made me change. Because originally I'd thought, you know, parachute mines, this explains a lot.
Doesn't the ski patrol in back in the day, didn't they trigger avalanches with dynamite?
There's a rifle round that'll trigger an avalanche.
But that's what I'm trying to say is that, you know, we're talking about ball lightning, which is an incredibly rare phenomenon, versus parachute mines that the Soviet Union was notoriously famous for being quiet about. And then for them to say, no, it wasn't parachute mines. We didn't do anything for this time period to that time period. Just kind of based on everything else, I think it would be remiss of us to say, oh, it had to be ball lightning, the most rare thing in the world that no one in the world has really seen, versus...
So what gives... Because the concussive... I mean, the
concussive blast of a mine,
yeah, but
is
going
to be strong enough.
But what gives the tree line the burn? And that's the only thing I keep going back to is I don't think the parachute mines are going to...
If the mine went off by the tree, then it was going to get the burn.
lots of trees. I mean,
yeah,
this could have
been. If they dropped multiple parachute mines, this yeah, absolutely.
Been, this could have been two mines that blew up.
But we're also talking about a time period in the history of the world where we're dropping thousands of bombs. We're not dropping two bombs. We're dropping large bombs that have thousands of little ones inside it. This is the time in our history where we were dropping a lot of ordnance versus dropping targeted ordnance like we do nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible that it was military testing. There were secret launches all the time. It could have been the spent stages of a rocket.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that this is exactly what happened. I'm just saying I think we would be remiss to just say it was ball lightning, which is one of the most rare phenomenon in the natural world, versus the likelihood that the Soviet Union was testing weapons to fight their mortal enemy
you
in the
think
1950s.
You think if they were testing concussive mines, they would find some shrapnel or something. That was the only other thing that I
could
think of.
The other thing is you also have to think of the nature of the Soviet Union and their willingness to hide evidence.
From five different groups of searchers? I just think
versus hiding evidence of an entire fucking spacecraft burning up, coming into our atmosphere, the ham radio operators across the world picked it up and the Soviet Union still denied it until recently. I'm just saying there's multiple options. I'm not saying that's exactly what happened. I'm just saying, you know, it would be unfair not to entertain the idea.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right.
Look up ham radio operators in the 1960s, Soviet Union launches. You'll hear about a very sad story about a poor young woman who's launched into space and her spacecraft failed. And as she was coming back to Earth, she was burning up, and the Soviets said nothing as she burned up and died in that spacecraft. So it's a very sad and touching story, but it's even more disturbing recording. Check it out. I believe it's Soviet space capsule. Google like Soviet space capsule on burning up, and you guys will hear something pretty disturbing. So definitely don't listen to it with kids around. All right, we should go to break. We still got Maynard's theory.
Yep.
And he's very excited. He's actually in costume for it. So we're going to see what happens.
Yep. No, ready to go.
I'm concerned.
I'm a little concerned, but at the same time, he's not masturbating, and that's kind of...
It's a win.
You know
what? No. It's a good thing when Maynard stops.
All right.
Okay, let's go. Let's go. Let's do it.
Famous Monsters. Celebrating horror, sci-fi, and fantasy genres since 1958. Their annual magazine is available now, along with new apparel released every month. Follow them on social media at Famous Monsters, and check out their entire catalog at CaptainCo.com.
All right, so we're back. We've covered two very kind of scientific theories. And now we're going to let Maynard talk for a minute.
You make it seem like Maynard may not have a scientific theory.
This is the guy that brought up Nazis on the moon, just to be clear.
I saw these come from scientific websites that I did some of this research on, and I'm not against the...
The word science in it doesn't make it a scientific
website. No, it was Discovery. And I'm very intrigued by the ball lightning thing. I'm not going to lie.
You said Discovery?
Yeah.
If this is about sharks, I'm going to be super mad.
No. This didn't take place during Shark Week.
Okay.
Wait, continue. These are the same people that gave us Sharknado?
No. That's sci-fi. That's
sci-fi.
Oh, all right, cool. Glad.
No, this is way more legit than sci-fi, though Sharknado was a fantastic film.
I wouldn't call it a film. I'd call it a thing that happened.
Hey, just don't talk about Ian Ziering in any bad way.
No, he's a beautiful man.
He's great. He's great.
He looks like he's about to invade Poland.
Yes. I mean, he's 72. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yeah,
I did.
I'm pretty sure his next stop is the secret moon base. Or Antarctica. Yeah. Well, whatever.
With Sarah Palin.
Yeah, he looks great for a 72-year-old man. I'm not going to lie.
Okay.
So we talked about multiple things were going on at once.
Yeah, multiple theories. It's not just one theory. It's multiple theories.
Right, so there's no way that it could have just been any one thing.
Uh-huh.
So one thing that does exist up around there, and again, I saw this on the Discovery Channel and on Snopes.
Snopes?
So it's pretty legit.
Hold on. Before you continue, did Snopes prove or disprove it?
It was on Snopes, so...
Okay.
I didn't get that far. I think I just read the headline, but we haven't talked about Yetis because they're known
to be the coolers. The things you put your beer
no,
in?
No, like the abominable snowman type Yetis, you know, Harry and the Hendersons type things.
Oh, Jesus.
Yes.
Christ.
So, okay. I mean, they're kind of like the, you know, up there, they're like the polar bears of Bigfoots.
Quick question. Harry and the Hendersons.
The polar bears of Bigfoot. Can we hold on 1 second? The polar bears of Bigfoot.
Yeah, like.
No,
yeah,
I have
questions
like, too.
You know, like a white
Harry
Yeti. You ever see the Boston Yeti? Like that, but like a real one.
Answer my question. Harry and the Hendersons, documentary, fictional movie. Your choice.
It was based on a true story. It was.
Oh,
I understand
Christ.
That John Lithgow is not, you know, he's
so
a real person.
We're going to get squatchy for this next segment.
Yeah, so anyway, Discovery Channel, it's on Snopes. And if you know, frame, I believe it was number 34 of the photos found on, I forget which gentleman had the picture, had the camera.
Well, there were two cameras.
Yes.
So you'd have to.
But I think it was frame number 34. And there was a clear, shadowy figure in the background. But he could only be a Yeti. He could only be a Yeti. He's huge.
Wait. I'm looking at the picture because I have the website up.
Yeah.
Frame 17 from the French guy's camera. Is that the one you're talking about?
Oh, maybe it was. Yes, where the guy's like right in the middle, and he kind of has like that Bigfoot pose.
So the picture of the blurry person.
Yeah, that could be a Yeti.
You think it's a Yeti?
He's big enough. I mean, because if you think about it, all these injuries that these people had, you know, like the ribs smashed and everything, a Yeti could have picked them up and threw them. And they're gonna and if a Yeti enters your tent, you're not gonna try to get out of the tent. Oh, you can get away from the Yeti. You're gonna cut your way through that. You're gonna scratch and claw so that stupid Yeti can't get you.
Oh,
what if it was multiple Yetis?
Multiple Yetis.
Harry and the Hendersons. That was the whole family.
I'm pretty sure the plural of Yeti is Yeti. It's like moose.
Moose. Yeah.
All right. Well,
Mises.
You know.
It's not Mises.
No,
it's just moose.
It's multiple. Yeah. Well, what if there were multiple Yeti? Could have happened.
Or that picture you're talking about is just a guy coming down a slope with some skis and he was out of focus.
I can't see any skis at all.
I mean, it's because you can't see where his feet are.
Right, because he's so tall that you don't even see them. Like, you're just looking up at, like, the only is basically, like, above his knees.
The only thing that the focus
there is... They're, like, 8 feet tall, 9 feet tall.
So you're telling me...
I told you, Discovery Channel, Snopes, I saw, you know.
Did this Discovery Channel actually say that there was a Yeti?
They said that it's been theorized, just like every other theory that we've talked about. It's been theorized because nobody knows. So you can't prove it wasn't a Yeti is really all I'm saying.
Just like I can't prove that Nazis landed on the moon first.
Exactamundo.
I mean, Jesus fucking Christ.
If these guys were so prepared, why didn't they have some Jack Link's beef jerky?
Why didn't they have a gun?
Oh, you couldn't have a gun back then.
Filet of fish.
You had to
Filet
register.
Of fish is what got Harry and the Hendersons.
They had to register the knives.
That's true.
I'm just saying, they had knives that they had to register. They weren't even supposed to have two cameras. The Russian government wasn't going to give them a gun.
Yeah, and one snuck a picture of a possible Yeti.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph.
A Yeti.
Okay. Look, like I said, I like the ball lightning theory, and it looks like some sort of an avalanche could have happened. Multiple things. A Yeti could have caused a goddamn avalanche. Yeti's shaking down a tree to get them, you know, and...
Yeti's shaking down a tree.
Is that what the sound of an avalanche is?
Yeah, I mean...
I think so. Yeah,
you only need a little bit of...
If I was to think the word avalanche, I would go...
You only need a little bit of interruption, and, you know, you got an avalanche up there and a blizzard.
Okay.
I like to think the sound of an avalanche might be like a... The theme in the tunnel of the Mario soundtrack, like doo 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 doo, doo doo doo, just bad news.
Just bad news all around.
So if you're ever on a mountain and you start hearing the Mario Brothers World 1-2 sound, take cover.
All right. Well, that was just the worst. So
thanks.
I think we've covered a number of things.
Ended on a strong note there.
Thanks.
We've covered Yetis.
I think next episode we let Maynard lead off.
Yeah, I think we're going to let him lead off this time. Next episode.
Okay.
No pressure.
We don't know what the next episode is, but tune in because I'm sure it's going to be more Nazis and Yetis. Jordan, anything to add?
Check out Famous Monsters.
Yeah, check out Famous Monsters. Check out thebrandedsports.com. Please buy our t-shirts. You will be helping the show immensely. Or go to our Patreon at patreon.com/SargeTheDestroyer. We've got a number of great tiers.
All I'm saying is I've spent $10 on worse.
I'm very much looking forward to this song.
I've spent $10 on just general nonsense, and felt really bad about it.
Let's
talk about our tiers real quick. Let's just go over the tiers real quick.
But you bought a wind-up toy, like of a nurse that spit sparks. It was a nun, actually.
Totally worth it. Totally worth it.
So, I mean, if he can
spend... It was
spend,
a fiery nun. She really believed in her shit.
If he can spend $10 on a street vendor, you could spend $10 on Patreon.
All right, Sarge's Privates. Yeah, I said it. $5 per month. It's a monthly shout-out on Citizen's Guide to the Supernormal. If you're not comfortable with making a monthly commitment, you can just donate a one-time $5, and we'll give you a shout-out. We've got special specialists. On top of the monthly podcast shout-out, I will create a one-time special video where I either roast you or compliment you.
Is that dealer's choice, or is that...
It's the buyer's choice. And then when we get to the $25 tier, it's Sassy Sergeants. You get access to special monthly mini-sodes where we read you a children's book. We promise to teach Maynard how to read.
I'll get there.
He can get
is
there.
That the, that's the only it. Reason he read the headline.
He has a lot of trouble with TH. He doesn't know whether it's th or th. It depends.
And CH too.
Telling me.
Yeah, he keeps saying thieves. It's thieves. Thieves.
Oh.
Yeah. The next tier is a $50 per month. That just makes you a fucking field marshal. We're going to write you a song. We originally wrote that as a joke, but then somebody did it, so now it's a thing we're going to do.
Per month,
but there's only 20 slots.
$50 per month. Ooh, is that a one-time thing, too?
It's a one-time thing. If you want to do a one-time thing, I won't be mad. We'll write you a song. There's only 20 slots.
Do you get a new song every month?
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah, if you're doing it monthly, sure.
Yeah, you got to provide a subject for us to sing about, though. I'm not going to do all the work for you.
So if I spend $50 monthly, I could have you write a song for me every month about a different subject?
Sure. Absolutely not, because you're on the show. All
right.
Yeah, not you.
Okay. If you donate $100 per month, that's Rear Admiral status. Uh-huh. I will review an episode of your favorite TV show or something in under 2 minutes. I mean, it's $100. We can negotiate. If you donate $1,000, you get promoted to civilian. I will do a video where I say a list of any 20 words you want.
Can we go back for a second? Hold on, give me a second. I just want to go back real quick.
Yeah.
So, when you say you'll review anyone's favorite episode or review someone's favorite TV show.
It has to be a TV show.
You said something. That leaves the door open to say,
I mean,
like,
it's $100. We can negotiate.
So, like... If somebody wanted you to review Debbie Does Dallas in 2 minutes?
Done. I'm in. Harry Cumshot. Done. Problem solved. All right. So then for $10,000, well, it's $10,000. So I guess we call you Daddy. And we'll travel to your house, get drunk with you, read you a bedtime story, and Maynard will tuck you in while we sing Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
We'll even make him take off the gimp mask just to make it more comfortable.
And then for $14,999, we're going to fire Jordan, and you're the new producer.
That's a monthly thing. Yeah, to keep
it's
that
It's monthly. It's got to be monthly. We got to pay for you, you know? All right, so I'm Saj at Bastard Prophet. I'm also at Saj the Destroyer on Instagram. Maynard is at Maynard Rules on Twitter.
Also Instagram.
Maynard Rules as well?
I don't have any photos up there yet, but we'll get there.
Okay. All right, and then Jordan, of course, is at CG Super Jordan.
And soon to be Maynard's Privates. Or no, what? Sarge's Privates on Instagram.
I love it. And then follow the show, of course, at C_G_SuperNormal. And that's where we'll drop show information. Please read the blog at thebrandedsports.com.
You'll follow
Branded_Sports on Twitter. And then... Oh, one more quick thing. We want to wish happy birthday to Meg from Michigan. Meg, we love you. You've been a big supporter since the very beginning of our first show, Misguided Musings. And then another shout out to Danielle, who bought, she's the first person to buy a CGS shirt.
Oh, wow, cool.
She's going to send us a picture. Danielle, we love you. You've been following the show for goddamn forever. She's been listening to us since we were Misguided Musings, so thank you.
Thank you.
I got nothing else, so I'm going to go buy some glass rods, I guess.
This is where we break into Yankee Candle.
Yeah, we're going to go break into Yankee
Candle.
I need
some good smells.
I'm going to smell so much. Just digging my nose in. Who's got the duct tape?
Are we doing the ESMR thing again?
Yeah, ESMR. Hey. Thanks for listening to the show.
You're the best.
I love you. Seven people just came. Just to be clear. Get a towel.